All right. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the 99%. I'm here with Elliot.
Hey, everybody.
And Marilyn.
Hey, what's up?
And today we are going to talk about pacing a year. We're about to hit 2021, I guess, in a little over a month or a little under a month. Thanks. Sorry. And so people are looking at getting back into racing and starting the year and getting jazzed up and excited. And so we're going to kind of run through the process of not exactly season planning, but maybe like how you expend energy throughout the year to be ready at the appropriate times instead of the inappropriate times.
Both mental and physical energy.
Yes.
Yeah.
And to start out, I just thought I'd tell a story about something I've done wrong quite a few times.
quite a few times.
Always start how by many learning years? From your mistakes.
So I'm saying this now so that I remember the mistakes that I've made as I'm starting to get think about my own season and hopefully
not as I do.
Yeah, do not do what I do. That's a bad place to start. So I do a fair amount of training in Tucson with Ben, and
who's Ben for the listener?
Ben Hoffman, who's considerably faster than I am at everything. That sometimes gets me into trouble. He is, in general, in the fall, take a little like summer break and then come back and get ready for a fall race. He's in general getting ready for Kona in October, and I tend to be getting ready for Ironman Arizona in November. And I'll start out doing kind of my training and then start following his training a little bit. And it's like, oh, just an extra hour on the bike here, an extra couple miles on the run here. And all of a sudden it's the second weekend in October and I am in race shape because I did the last 6 weeks of training with at least some of Ben's sessions, not all of them. And yeah, it turns out I get super fit and then it's October and I'm ready to race and I've got 6 more weeks until my race and I've got to try and figure out what to do to try and like maintain some sort of fitness or take a little break and come back. But I have this thing where I peak for Ben's race, not my race. So I inappropriately pace the back half of the year and then I'm like trying to scrap to put together some training to make myself stay in shape through Ironman Arizona. So you do not want to do that. You do not want to be fit 6 weeks before your race. That's a long time to carry fitness.
So is the moral of the story, don't do someone else's training or not to do someone else's training that's geared 6 weeks before your peak. What's the moral?
Or just somebody who's significantly faster than you's training and 6 weeks before.
And that trains more than you.
Yeah. So which one is it, Jesse? Because that was a lot of ways you messed up.
Well, I think that's exactly the point is that, you know, it's a multi-layered mistake. So you can get so many good takeaways from it. Those are all good points that that you should be thinking about in order to make sure you are staying true to what you need to do to be ready at the right time and not what is maybe fun in the moment. So that's my little story to get us going. Marilyn is going to talk a little bit about how to do things more appropriately than me.
I don't know if it's more appropriately, but what I will tell you is with the whole idea of this, the first time I ever heard the idea of pacing your year, fun story from my side was, you know, I was pretty new into triathlon, pretty new into professional racing. And I had the pleasure and, you know, really lucky to be surrounded by some pretty experienced, phenomenal athletes. And one of the athletes I trained with all the time was a lady named Joanna Lawn. And I don't know if a lot of the new people know her, but if you look her up, she was probably one of the all-time greats, top three in Hawaii many times, won Ironman New Zealand, back to back to back to back.
She's really a big deal.
She's a big deal. So if you look her up, pretty legendary. And she was a training partner of mine in Boulder and a good friend. And one day, you know, I was pretty new and I was riding with her and she brought this idea to me. It wasn't, you know, something new to her, but she just wanted to teach me. She said, you know, Marilyn, it's really, really important that, you know, how you pace your sessions and you pace your races, you need to understand about pacing your year. And that really hit home with me because here is someone who would be in a very, very good performance level in March, you know, February, March, for winning New Zealand year after year after year. And she also talked about not only pacing your year, but learning to pace your career. And this was, again, someone who I admired and was becoming a good friend who, you know, was able to back it up year after year after year. And then she would also be in peak performance to go top three trying to win Kona later in October. And so she had a really, really good understanding of not only what that meant throughout the year, but she did it for multiple years in a row and her entire career. And so I felt really lucky as a new athlete and to be exposed to this really early on. And then to back her statement that sort of hit home with me, again, I was friends with a lot of these people who had were successful over and over again. And I was on another ride with another Kiwi, Cameron Brown, again, very successful, long career, similar top three in Hawaii, wins New Zealand every
career
year.
Career that's still going. And he's like, what, 48?
Career that's, yeah, I mean, pretty unbelievable. And again, he sort of, without even being part of that original conversation, just out of the blue, comes to me and says, you know, Marilyn, the key to success and the key to being good at this sport is ask yourself every single day if you can back it up. Can you back up tomorrow? Can you back up next week? Can you back up next month? Can you back up next year? And so it was this idea of, you know, can you back it up? And that goes true to the point of what you were saying, Jesse, is can I back up my training if I'm doing X person's training? Probably not, because it might be too much for me, or it might be too soon, or, you know, if is it a progressive overload that is suited to me where I'm at or to my races? So here was two completely independent people who were consistently extremely successful, not only at the front of the year, but the back of the year, year after year. And they weren't even a part of each other's conversation, but they both said essentially the exact same thing to me. And so that's something that always stuck with me through my whole career, was not only pacing your sessions, pacing your races, but understanding pacing your year and then pacing your career, whatever that looks like. So, you know, whether you're amateur or professional, but, you know, being able to see that, and that can piggyback off what are those athletes that end up becoming those one percenters that they know when to perform. So like Jesse, you were saying, okay, I was ready to perform 6 weeks before it was time. And then I was hanging on for dear life by the time it was time for me to go. And maybe your performance was spent in training. How many of those cases do we see, you know, this is a one percenter, or this is someone who they leave their race out on the training course. And so they brought these ideas to me really young. They stuck with me, and it's something that I've always tried to carry through and with athletes that I teach and coach and in my programming. So I think, you know, we're lucky to be exposed to that. How about you, Elliot? Where are you with that?
Well, so I was actually, Jesse and I didn't even talk about this before the pod, but I haven't coached Ben since spring of 17. So it's been a few years, but previous to that, I coached him for whatever, 12 years. So that was a lot of seasons, right? And a large portion of a career. And Ben's, this is Ben Hoffman again, is essentially a professional. He's not a professional. He's one of the best in the world at pacing a season. And we always took it, so like Hawaii obviously is in October, but a few years he didn't race Hawaii, and we knew that. And in particular, in like 2012, sponsor who shall not be named really, 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 really wanted him to do Hawaii. And we were just like, no, we're going to win these other races. The build up to Hawaii is too much. It makes more sense to practice winning and then to show up when you're ready to go top 10, which the 13, he was, that's a whole different story, but he was 15th, and then 14th, he was second. And then he was right in the running, and 15th had bathroom issues. And then 16th, he was fourth again. So it was like, clearly we needed that year. So that's part of that career thing. What I really want to talk about though is the pacing of the year. We always knew, okay, you have this, the biggest race of your year is in October. And those 8 weeks before, we always kind of like blocked the 8 weeks out. And then tangentially, like not just those 8 weeks before the race, that's kind of like all hands on deck go time. And then you also had like, you always had 2 weeks before that was kind of like your buffer. So you weren't all hands on deck 10 weeks out, but you were doing the finishing touches to make sure that you were ready to do the final workouts heading into those final 8 weeks. Jesse, you're giving me a funny look. Did I lose you?
No, just, I was mathing.
Oh, okay.
The math teacher was mathing.
The math teacher was 8 + 2 = 10. Okay. So that's to me, those were like for an Ironman at a really high level, that was the 8 weeks. And then essentially you have 1.5, 2 weeks of taper. So like that month and a half block of where you're just all hands on deck. Every workout is 100% focused on the goal, which was an Ironman distance event. The flip side of that is then the downtime. So most people talk about your off season, which is maybe like when you're legit just resting, which could be 1 week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, depends on the athlete in the year. And I think we already did a podcast about that, but then most people don't talk about that preseason essentially, which is for a lot of people right now. Some people are in their off season right now. Some people just ended their off season, but like, how do you treat that next block of training? So you did your off season, and then a lot of people just turn it on, right? And so Ben, like Jesse, they're in Tucson. Actually, all you guys are in Tucson right now. Marilyn, you're in Tucson. I'll be there in 3 weeks. And so people turn it on, right? They show up in Tucson and they just go all hands on deck. And so what Ben always did really well was he didn't go all hands on deck. He took like a couple months where he just kind of eased in at his own pace. And it helps that he's one of the fastest guys in the world, so he can still partake in group rides at a lower level. But he's doing it like at his pace. But if you see him often enough, like Jesse knows, like he's not really going full bore when he doesn't have to, right? He might be towards the front of the group, but he's not going like all the way in. Jesse, would you say that's a fair assessment?
Yeah, I find it extremely frustrating because I don't have the same ability to go to the group rides and sit in and not be kind of maxing out. And he could kind of do that for the spring and get like moderately fit. And then when he's ready, just start going off in the breakaways and moving up a lane in masters. And like you said, kind of really turning it on, because he is fit enough to kind of go through the motions and be there without actually being switched on.
Right. And so the thing is, so that's what he does at a super high level, is he's patient, but he could get annoyed by the fact that somebody flew into Tucson and is off the front of the group ride, but he's not, you know, he takes his time. And so like, if you're not the best person in the world, or, I mean, he never was, but he was pretty darn close. You make that decision. Okay, where's my line? Like, and then maybe I just need to take that step back. Anyways, so that's kind of like an example of a really nice way to like make sure you have your block where you're fully engaged heading into the race. And I think the other important part to talk about is when you first come off that off season, to just kind of like go through the motions, as Jesse was saying, you're still doing the training, but you're not like 100% invested. You're not killing yourself day to day.
Yeah. I think what's real, I found really helpful for a lot of my athletes to visualize what this will look like and help them learn what that pacing, you know, the blocks and years looks like, is we'll discuss together. Okay, here's your A races or the A part of your season. And then I'll actually put in training peaks for them, you know, 4 weeks to race, 8 weeks to race, 12 weeks, 16 weeks, 20 weeks. And when you know, an athlete sees you're more than 20 weeks out from a race, and it's right there glaring them in the face on training peaks, like we're 28 weeks out from a race. It's like, that sort of eases some of that anxiety of like, oh my God, I need to be out there absolutely killing myself and going to max effort and seeing PR numbers and stuff. They can know like, okay, if I'm a little off pace or the training volume across the week doesn't look like it normally does, or I miss a couple sessions, or I mean, you never want anyone to miss sessions, but you know, the intensity of the overall, you know, program as well as energy and emotional energy, it gives them that freedom to see like, oh, I'm 24 weeks out, I don't need to. And then even at 20 weeks out, it's like, okay, we might start to see a little bit more structure and shape to the training towards my A race, but I'm still 20 weeks out. And then they see, and then it also directs them when they start to see, oh, well, crap, I'm only 12 weeks out for my main race. I need a little urgency, and I need to, you know, make sure that I hit this session and I've organized my life to make sure I get that long ride in, or I get this speed session in because I'm only 12 weeks out. And I found that to be a very helpful tool, not only for me, but also to keep an athlete's mind on track in terms of what level of intensity they need to bring to that block of training. And if you can both see that every single time you open Training Peaks, it's a very, very simple thing, but it really actually helps shape that a little bit. I don't know if you guys have any little tricks or tools that you do with your groups to do that.
I guess one thing I do is kind of giving like objectives for the block of time. So maybe we're working on like skills instead of like pure speed or whatever it is, like, you know, like kind of preseason stuff or like just that building stuff where you're not saying, okay, the race is 28 weeks out, so we're working on something else for the next 8 weeks in order to get ready to work on more race specific things. So then they have things to think about besides like, okay, like, am I hitting my Ironman pace right now? So switching the focus. So they are maybe engaged, but you know, at something different than just making sure they're getting totally fit for that race.
Yeah. Like as a present example, one of the last people I just talked to today most likely has COVID and is having like significant issues as a result of that with like weird heart rate, getting super, super high, in workouts when they shouldn't be high. And we were basically going through like, okay, what happens if a doctor tells you you shouldn't do anything intense? How do we actually get stronger without any intensity? And it was like, for that person, it's just like, oh, we're going to do a bunch of like hiking and easy walking, and like nailing down the physical therapy routine that maybe you normally don't spend quite as much time on, but it's still something productive, still helps you build towards whatever your long-term goal is, or for this person it does. So yeah, same idea.
Yeah. And I think if someone can see that, you know, it relieves a bit of anxiety for someone, if they can see, hey, I'm still 16 weeks out, or I'm still, you know, X number of weeks out. If I'm sick right now, or I have a little injury right now, yeah, we want to get rid of it. And we want to be able to make a change in who we are with our, as far as, you know, improvement and working on these skills and stuff. But there's not that pressure of, oh man, I need to really be seeing some kind of form come around and see some of my best numbers. Cause it's like, well, we've still got lots of time, you know? So, I think when people can see that, it helps them that understanding that, well, I don't need to be in lifetime best shape on this Saturday's ride because I've got weeks and weeks and weeks to get there. And you want to see that, like, you keep reminding them, hey, we're going to get, it's like anything, you know, training is about progressive overload. So it's like, we're progressively getting a little bit better and a little bit better all the way to race day. And that's, again, teaching athletes, we don't need to race necessarily or be our best in training. We need to keep getting better and we need to progressively keep getting, you know, faster. But ultimately, we want to see our best performance on race day. And that's learning to pace that, right? I mean, the worst thing that can happen is we see someone do their lifetime best performance 2 weeks before a race. You know, it's like, oh, shoot, we just spent. So I'll spend even time with athletes that I see coming into really good form and say, like, I'll describe it like a poker game to them. Like, hold those last two cards close to your heart. Like, just even if you feel like you've got it because you're super fit, you're excited, you're seeing everything come around and they're out on maybe some training session or group session. And then they let the reins loose and boom, that was the race. And you got to explain to them as a coach, like, hey, let's just hold that last special card back and we're going to play it only on race day. And doesn't matter if your training partners or anyone else knows you've got it. I know you've got it. You know you've got it. And we play that card just right on the right day. And I think those are tools that mentally we can shape that with our athletes if we just simply have those conversations throughout the builds and right into the events.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about 2 weeks being bad. Let me tell you, 6 weeks is way worse. That's
Well, I think, I mean, I know personally as a younger athlete, it was like, I was often the most fit of the year, like on February 15th or something, you know? So it happens a lot, right? People have an early off season and they train like crazy for November, December, January, February. And that's not a great way to do it.
And I'll actually have those exact conversations with athletes. I'll say, you know, I'll be holding back, and they'll say, I'll get the email, oh, Marilyn, I could have gone way harder on this session. Why did you tell me these paces or these watts? And I'm like, because it's not time yet, you know, and I'll just say it just like that. It's just simply not time yet. If you're going that fast right now, at some point you're going to come into form and then we're going to fall off a ledge, and we need to save that for this time, you know? And so that can be frustrating for an athlete if you don't have that conversation, because they think, well, she just doesn't believe in me, or he doesn't believe in me. They don't think I can actually go this fast or this hard. I'm stronger than this right now. But see, that's often the exact opposite. I'm like, I know you can do those numbers, and actually you're going to do better than those numbers, but let's make sure we do them at the right time. And now is not the time. So hold back a little. It's okay to get blown off the back of the group ride right now. It doesn't matter. You know, it's like, it's going to matter 3 months from now if you can be there or not. And that can come into, I remember Laura Bennett and Greg Bennett, they used to have a little strategy where, you know, they would have a bowl of ice cream every single night for like months on end. And then in that small window, right before they knew they needed to come into form for a major race, that's when they would like tighten up the dietary needs and those kinds of things to say like, okay, now's the time to make that last little like gas on the pedal to come into form for the race, versus, you know, we don't need to be, it's, you know, because it's also mentally and emotionally exhausting to be like completely on point all year or for every single session and then expect to turn it up a notch in those last 3 weeks and then on race day. It's like sort of hover at that building progression, like you're doing homework all the way, all the way, all the way, all the way, and then put the icing on the cake and then let it rip on race day. That sort of has to be something that we teach our athletes to do to become performers, you know, performers when it matters, and not just trainers that often perform really well at, you know, 80% in all of the training sessions and, you know, win all the group stuff. And then they get out on race day and they're not really any faster. And then, you know, everybody else is 10% faster and they're wondering what happened.
I think you just essentially summarize, training is to prepare you to race. And it doesn't matter if you're not ready to race on race day. So literally every single workout is just to put you in a position so that you can go your hardest during the race. And if you're going your hardest not during the race, you messed up.
Exactly. I mean, if you're too tired because you've just gone to, you know, to the well every single week for, you know, the last 4 months, and then by the time it's time to just put that little bit of extra in, you're like, well, actually it's not there anymore. You know, that's the things that we have to manage in terms of numbers. And, you know, you're holding really fast athletes back. It's also an injury prevention thing when you're doing holding the reins back. I mean, I literally used to have to do that with horses. You know, you would never gallop the horses, you know, at what track speed is going to be. I mean, you're conditioning them, taking lap splits, that kind of things. And then it's really only when it's go time that it's like, now we let the reins loose, you know? And I think if you visualize top performers in that context, then you're going to get more out of them on race day. It's just emotionally managing them to understand, like, you know, and I think some people come by that more naturally, right? Some people come by it naturally where they just know that instinctually, like you're saying, maybe Ben's one of those people, that's one of his gifts. So why he is one of the best in the world, he has that gift to look around and go, now's not the time. But when it's go time, he's got that extra gas. And those are those special people that are top three in the world. They're the performers. They know when to turn it on. But it's also a teachable skill. These are things as coaches, we can teach people that. For example, like those little tools, like, hey, we're 24 weeks out, 20 weeks out, 16 weeks out, hold back. This isn't because I don't believe in you. I'm just telling you, now's not the time. You don't need to be running, you know, 5:30s right now. 6 minutes, you know, if you're doing 6 minutes, it's just fine. A little less injury. You don't need to be in that good of shape right now. You're still getting plenty of work. Like, I think they're important conversations to have with our athletes to teach them this.
Yeah, I think the big thing I hear you saying is that, like, it is about communicating that so everyone's on the same page and athletes know why they're doing the work they're doing and how it's preparing them to do maybe the race specific work they need to do later on as the race gets closer. And I think the other side of that is kind of an athlete's time, energy, and like family, work, life balance and how that all comes into play. And if athletes are, I guess, going big in January or whatever you want to call it, then they might be kind of digging into that time well with their family and maybe taking some time off of work or whatever it is and conserving those resources to put them 12 weeks, 10 weeks, 8 weeks, 6 weeks out from their goal race so they can be fit at the right time is super important. Kind of like we talked a little bit about last time about spending that time with your family in the off season. I think, I think that, you know, spacing that out so that you can be away from your family a little bit more, spend a little more time training at the appropriate time can be really important to help with that balance.
Yeah. And I think also, sorry, Elliot, I'll just jump in here. I know you're going to say something there, but just also, you know, determine with your, if you've got a new athlete that is needing a lot of base work early in the year, maybe that's more time consuming, but the intensity is going to be quite a bit less. And then as you build towards races, maybe the time is coming down, but the intensity is coming up. So it's just really dependent on, you know, how you're developing an athlete, where they're at in their development. A very mature athlete who has many years under their belt and they've got a lot of base, you're probably not going to need that. You're going to be pacing the year in a different way where you're saying like, we're going to be doing a lot less and it's not as intense. And maybe we're doing some focus blocks and then we're going to really bring the, you know, overall program up only that, you know, 12, 16 weeks out, 8 weeks out, that kind of thing. So again, important conversations specific to the athlete and timing it right to that event. So, you know, I think make sure that it's not like a one shoe fits all, like, oh, we need to be doing very little training all the way until 16 weeks out. It's like, well, no, you know, maybe you're a newer athlete and actually you need a lot of low intensity volume to prepare you for that. So just those specific details, I think it's important to just make mention of that so that it's not, you know, for people listening, they have some idea of, oh, well, if it looks a little different for me, that's also okay.
The one thing we haven't talked about yet is like, so I mentioned the 8 weeks kind of like total focus before an Ironman, sometimes it's 10. I mean, I've heard plenty of people say 12 and 16, but I personally think that's way too long. You're already doing training to prepare for those 8 weeks. So the other thing I think is interesting is if you're going to do a short course season or a couple of short course seasons, I think a lot of people are under the impression that you need to be doing like speed work and like high intensity work for a significant or really focused work, whatever you and your coach think is most important for you to be ready for that short race. You need to be doing that for a long period of time to head into these short races. And I honestly think it's almost the opposite. I think you need a handful of workouts and then it's because the races are shorter, you're often doing more of them in a row. And I don't think there's much difference between preparing for a short course season and preparing for a single Ironman in terms of like the intensity and focus takes place over 2.5 months. Maybe it's 3 races, maybe it's 6 races. Maryland does not have COVID as far as we know. And
sorry, guys. So,
you're good. So you have this big build in where maybe it's not quite as focused and intense. You're still doing training, but the pressure you maybe should be putting on yourself to have really good workout execution, you know, cutting a workout a little bit short here or there, or like giving yourself the room to have an off day here or there is not that important, except for maybe the couple of weeks, literally the 2 or 3 weeks before your first race. And then ultimately what turns into your season, if you will, if you were, you know, doing 3 local sprints or Olympics and then heading to age group nationals, right? Or if you're going to do ITU Worlds or the age group race or something like that. I think that idea is pretty similar and not everybody treats that the same way. And you need that emotional energy to head into a race and really be ready to push yourself. And I think people need to remember that if you are so tired from your training that you can't push on race day, like that needs to change. It's better to show up at a race willing to go as hard as you possibly can and 5% less fit than fully fit and not willing to go hard. So it's that's an important balance. And I guess, do you guys have any specific examples or stories on that front in terms of like the emotional, like I just showed up and I wasn't ready to push?
Yeah, that's happened to me a number of times. I think over the years I've gotten much better at that. And part of that is, yeah, just being willing to show up at the race 98% fit instead of trying to get 110% fit and then and not feeling sluggish on race day because I was a little bit burnt out or tired, even just mentally exhausted from, you know, trying to push myself over and over again in training. I think one of my biggest flops was actually Ironman Wales, where I was probably in the best shape of my life 2 weeks before and got to that race and felt like I barely finished. But yeah, it's because I put too much pressure on the sessions leading up and didn't
you show up sick?
I was a little bit sick. Yeah. I mean, I can lay out some excuses, sure. But I think I was a little bit sick because I was.
Yeah. You overdid a couple sessions. And I remember I was like, why did you do that? And then you were like, well, I'm trying to be 100% ready. And then it was like, well, that was not the day to go overboard on that workout. And that's, I think, what led to your sickness, as I recall.
Yeah. It was just like, you know, a few percent here or there where I stepped in the gas pedal a little too hard and yeah, paid for it by flying all the way to England to not perform.
But conversely, didn't you have, I want to say like maybe 3 or 4 years ago in Arizona, you were like, I don't know about this, but you were super, super healthy and ready to go. And you, I think at the time it was your PR, you since surpassed it, but I can't remember which year that was, but you've had that experience at Arizona where like 1 year you didn't do what Ben was doing. And you showed up and you were terrified heading in, but then you were fully ready to race and your body was healthy on the day.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's where I would say people would want to be is like maybe shying away from going overboard, being 95, 98% fit, and then being mentally like healthy, happy, be excited to be at the race line. I kind of like to picture like that scene in Braveheart where he's like standing there just yelling hold for like waiting to put their shields up or whatever it was. And that's kind of
hikes. The horses are running in.
Yeah.
Come
yeah.
on, man.
Sorry. I picture that scene for like the last 4 weeks of training where it's like, okay, I could like go around this guy right now or whatever it is, but I'm just going to hold. I'm going to stay right here. Keep my heart rate a little lower, feel good. And just knowing that that gear is there and not using it is kind of like that feeling I want to have going in instead of that feeling of like, yeah, I just got the most out of that session. I'm totally spent now. I want to stay on the other side of that line.
It takes a lot of practice and confidence though. I mean, really the ticket is the confidence, you know, it's I think for most athletes in that last little bit, you're getting a little bit cagey, but you're also at your, you know, probably your all-time fittest. And so you're looking for that sort of constant reassurance. Like I'm going to be ready. I'm fast. I'm ready to hit this. And it takes just an enormous amount of confidence and patience to say, not today, not today, you know, hold those shields back. And sometimes the fitter you get and the faster you get, the harder it is to know where that line is because you're like, well, if I'm not pushing it, am I going to be ready to toe the line with the best and compete? And so it's a real fine art for sure. And it's a definite, that is where it is. It's useful to get outside your own head and have other eyes on you, no matter how good you are, to say, look, we can see these numbers. We can see these trends. I can see where you're at, you know, let's just make sure we hold off here today, or, you know, it's okay for you to have an extra rest day because everything in your brain is going to be telling you, no, I need to test myself right now. And I think the older you get, the more experience you get, the more times you have successful races like that, where you're like, oh, I went in a little underdone and I actually competed really well. You gain some confidence from that. And, you know, I think that that can make a big difference. You know,
do we rat him out, Marilyn?
Jesse just left.
Jesse like, left the pod.
He totally just got up and ran out. Bye, Jesse.
We're still recording. I was actually going to ask both of you specific examples, I guess, of when that happened. But
yeah, I mean, you know, I've seen it many times. I even saw it and experienced it when we were racing early in our career. My partner at the time was also a professional athlete, and he had come into excellent, probably the lifetime best form that he had been in going into a race. And because he was new and didn't quite have that experience to know, like, it's okay, I'm confident. And you know, you do these other races to prepare for your races. So like a C competition type race. And we had gone to a bike race about 2-3 weeks before the main race. And literally let the hounds loose because he could. And then by the time he got to the race, it was that example that had been, you know, just spent the cookies just a little bit too early. And so not only learned the lesson, but then, you know, was able to, whether it's from success or failure, understand like, oh, okay, it's time to, I need to hold back a little bit when I'm getting into that form, or it's okay to hold back. And then again, it's also knowing when to push. Like if you say, hey, this is actually a key session within this 10 days, that's going to make a difference. And I need to stay on point here and stay sharp and stay right on the paces so that I don't fall asleep in that time period. You know, we can also talk about like, you know, monitoring how, you know, arousal control within competition, but within those weeks going leading in and knowing that stuff. I think it's definitely a learned skill through experience. So the more mature and more experience you get, the more confidence you get, more confident you are, the better you get at it.
Was that Chris?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and then I ended up coaching, I think, you know, this, I ended up coaching him for like 5 years, later on. And that, so this is Chris McDonald for those listening. But when I started coaching, he was already great at that, right? He was great at showing up and, he always worked really hard, but you could get him to back off if you told him to. If you didn't tell him to back off, he wouldn't, but he was cognizant of the fact that, okay, maybe he'd push too hard early on, right? As just like an overall, for someone who's really confident, confidence in his training was not a great thing he had. So he wanted to do more and push himself harder and harder. But if you reminded him, he would be like, okay, I'll listen to you because I know I made that mistake before. But as like an older athlete, he was like, he would have had an issue with it if you weren't there to tell him. But as long as you were there to tell him, he's like, okay, trust it. Like, you need to give yourself some time. And then he'd show up and we were quite successful with that, especially like leading into double Ironmans, where he'd do an Ironman two in 2 weeks or two in 1 week. And we were able to win like some back-to-back ones, which was pretty sweet.
So. Yeah. And again, the main point of all this conversation is that it comes from experience and confidence, whether it's experience and success or failure, you kind of have an understanding of, it's okay to be not in great shape right now. Like we talked earlier about Ben, you know, he has that confidence, whether it comes innately to him that he just knows, or through years and years of experience, also know like, it's okay to be just chill right now. I don't need to be crushing this group ride because when I need to turn it on, you know? And so I think it comes back to that. And I think I'll always circle back to the coaches out there, that if you notice someone has that natural ability, definitely continue to nurture it and point it out to them so they become aware of it. And the ones that don't have that natural ability, you know, find strategies to teach it to them, so they become more and more in tune to what that feels like and develop their confidence in it. And most times it's going to become developing their confidence to say, it's okay, I don't need to hit a PR every single Tuesday threshold session I do. As long as I'm working threshold and I'm in that range, then I'm improving and I'm, you know, working the energy system I need to. It doesn't need to be a PR every single time. It needs to be a PR on race day. So, you know, just as long as we keep teaching our athletes that, I think they're going to keep getting better. Jesse's back in the building. Wait, you're at it. Yeah, we said he left. He got up and left.
Jesse was only gone for about 30 seconds, but we bashed him for 25 of those.
Oh, come on. What? there's a lot going on around here, you know, so I gotta stay on my toes. So what about the other side of the coin? We've talked a little bit about the pointy end here. What about people that are, say, getting ready to finish their first Ironman? And so I think that pacing of the year changes a little bit. I think that 8 week window that we're talking about really might actually stretch out to a little bit longer time frame, where they've kind of got to be working on that build and maybe being a little bit more focused.
I honestly personally think it's the opposite. It's like, you never want to it's much easier to overwhelm a beginner and get them to dig into a hole when it's the first time they're going there, right? Because they don't know what they don't know, which sometimes is a strength, right? Which, like, you don't know if you've never been into battle that it's scary out there, or so I'm told, that, you know, like, short of being in a few fist fights. right? But if you've never been in a wrestling match, which I've been in a lot of those, with officials, not actual street fights, everyone, singlet and all. So if you've never been in one, you don't know that, like, you go out there and you have to win the match. You have to, like, you have to go out and you have to do something decisive to win the match. And it involves aggression and it's freaking scary, especially when you're a little kid and it's one of your first times. And anyways, the point is you don't know that till you go out there. And that's the same thing with a beginner in triathlon, right? They don't, a lot of times they just think it's pain and suffering or like how tough you are. And a lot of it's what they don't realize is, oh, it's really how patient am I and how willing am I to go out and do a pretty good job for 200 days in a row and never do a great, maybe if you do your A plus job, you're actually too tired from it. I don't know. That's my first reaction.
I mean, I completely agree with you from a like emotional and psychological standpoint of preparation for beginners with that strategy. But I will say I disagree in terms of if you're looking at them, like obviously from a physiology standpoint of view, they're not going to have the miles in their legs and the just hours under their belt to say, okay, we've got all this under our belt. You've been training for years. You've done 5, 6 Ironmans. Like we can hold the reins on all of this, you know, and we can look at like 8 weeks, 10 weeks, those kinds of things you're talking about. So a beginner, yes, emotionally and psychologically, we have to say, let's keep it fun. Let's keep it light. Let's not get too serious. You're going to completely emotionally burn yourself out. If you're ready to race an Ironman, you know, 8 months out from your Ironman, or you're like coming in like the ultimate warrior on, you know, a year out from when you signed up for your Ironman. However, physically, they're going to need a very long preparation, which I think is the point you're getting at, Jesse, by bringing this topic up. It's like, look, I find for most of those beginners, they don't take it now, they don't take it seriously enough. They sign up for their Ironman, it's a year from now. And then they just sort of go into, I'm cool with 5 or 6 hours of training a week forever. And then all of a sudden they're like, holy shit, it's only 12 weeks to my race. And they really haven't done enough preparation work to be able to handle the training that the Ironman's gonna, you know, demand. Then they get out in the Ironman and they're like, oh, I cramped, or I had nutritional problems, or all this stuff. It's because, yeah, well, you didn't have the miles that you needed to complete the training necessary. And now you're actually underprepared going in. So I think the point is that.
I guess, but so yeah, I think we agree on that, but I was more saying like, you have to tell them there's going to be all this work, but you're just like, it's always inching along. And like with that idea that you had where you're like, oh, we're 16 weeks out, we're 20 weeks out, we're 24 weeks out. Like you're like, hey, you're 24 weeks out, which sounds like forever, but this is what you could currently do. And if you're trying to finish an Ironman and currently it'd be hard to finish a half Ironman, you're 24 weeks out. You're like, hey, you got a ways to go. Like, but what you don't need to do is go out and ride 180K just to say you did it. I guess that's kind of my point, right? You're just like inching them along, like giving them a new goalpost every couple of weeks, but make it a really, really small goalpost where it's feasible. Is that right? What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I just think that like for a seasoned athlete, that's not even part of the conversation because they're so fit for year round, year after year, and they've got so much experience. Now the conversation is that, you know, 12 weeks, 10 weeks, 8 weeks. But if we've got someone new, they've never even ridden over 2 hours and we're going to be asking them to race 112 miles and then back it up with a marathon and swim first. It's like, okay, well, we got to get that bike mileage up. And there needs to be, just my experience has been with new athletes in Ironman, you kind of have to almost put a little clarity and urgency into how much preparation these events actually take, because a lot of people sign up for them now and they don't fully grasp how big they are and how long a day it's going to be. And so I find with the newer athletes, I spend a lot of time helping them understand like how big a task it is that they've taken on and putting a little fire and urgency under their butt to say like, hey, we've got a lot of work to do. And a year is really, if you're starting from scratch, it's not that long. Brand new athletes that I work with, if I have total control over things, I won't even let them do an Ironman for a couple of years. I take that long. It's like, let's do some sprints, let's do some Olympics, then graduate to halves, do a few halves, get all that volume in your body and your legs, get some race experience. And then maybe on year, end of year 2 or into year 3, we can look at, now we're ready for an Ironman type build. Now that's not always an option or a luxury. That's like the perfect situation, you know? But for those reasons, because I think, again, if we're talking about pacing a career or pacing development of an athlete, of course, some people come to you, they're going to do this one time. They've never done any triathlon. They come to you fresh off the gates and I'm going to do an Ironman this year and then be one and done and gone. Well, then I'm going to spend some time explaining the urgency of how much training they've got to get done pretty early on to be ready to do this, this task. So yeah, that's,
we probably need to do a whole podcast on appropriate fear.
Right.
Yeah.
And how it's changed over the years. I mean, I remember way back, you guys have been around a long time too. It's like, way back in, early 2000s, people signed up for an Ironman and it was like, I feel like everyone understood like how long
it was it was a year process, but you had to do a few years before you could get in the start line. Like if you were going to Penticton, right, for the start line, everyone in the start line was like, oh, I did a couple halves now, so now I'm willing to get in the start line and devote the next year.
Yeah, it's like year three or, it's like, and now people literally are from the couch to, they expect in 3 months time, we're going to do an Ironman. And I think that's like a whole nother podcast is that the respect for how long these races are. I always joke around. I'm like, it's pretty far, right? Like you're going to be going.
It's so far.
You're going to be going very far. You're going to be exercising all day, So that's like my famous line. It's pretty far. It's pretty far. So yeah, that could be a whole nother conversation for sure.
So it sounds like the preparation to start training becomes much more crucial the less experienced an athlete is, right? So maybe that 12 weeks of like focus training is like similar, but that 12 weeks before that, or that 24 weeks before that, or that 36 weeks before that is much more important for an athlete if they don't have the years of training in their legs, they don't have that resilience built up. They really need to make sure that they're doing the right things and preparing in order to be in a spot where they can handle the actual Ironman training when it comes. Because if they've never ridden 2 hours, then they really need to get ready so that when it's time to ride for 5 or 6 hours, they can actually handle that load appropriately.
I think you could say that with any distance, honestly, right?
Well, sure.
But yeah. It becomes even more imperative to just not have a terrible day on Ironman, because like if you go slow in an Olympic,
it's pretty far.
Yeah. Yeah. If you go slow in an Olympic, you take an extra 20, 30 minutes. Right. But if you go slow in an Ironman, like you're just out walking in a field for a while. Like it's not fun.
The funniest was when, so Klas Björling is a Swedish athlete way back in the day who is a pretty fast runner. He ran like 240s off the bike. Yeah. And one time he ended up having to walk the whole second half of the marathon. And afterwards he was like, takes a long time to walk a half marathon. He'd just never been out there that long. And we're like, yeah, when you don't run, when you're not a runner who runs 240, it takes a long time, dude. Like, welcome to the rest of our world. He's like, God, that takes a long time to walk. Yeah.
And that's a different kind of sore too, from being on your feet that long. It's it hurts.
When was the last time you walked one, Jesse?
China, a year-ish ago.
Oh, gotcha.
You know what? Interesting too. This, I don't know if this is even a worthwhile thing to add to the conversation, but I raced full time for 10 years, and obviously my preparation for all of my Ironmans were in the respect of trying to, podium or win the races. So we're talking about massive amounts of preparation and going in very fit and very focused. And then as I, retired and came back to the sport, and 5 years off, blah blah blah, going to do another Ironman to do it with my athletes and just do it as an amateur. And I did the, I haven't run for 5 years, but I'm going to start from scratch to, I think I gave myself, I think it was 4 months to race day. And
From first run to the Ironman?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was 20 minute walk jog to Ironman. And I hadn't been running in like 5 years. And all this conversation we're having, the reason I'm telling this story is, running, when I was running to compete for the podium, at that time you could run somewhere between, 3:10 to 3:30 as a female and be in contention for the podium. I know the sport's evolved a lot since then, but back then, you would think that would hurt a lot more, right? Now, where I'm going with this is that having that 5 years off and then having only 4 months preparation into an Ironman, I ran my slowest marathon ever in Ironman, even compared to my first one. And it was the most painful experience of my life. Like I got to the last 12 kilometers of the run at Ironman Texas, and I was like, this hurts so much, because I didn't have, you know, the difference between having years and years and years and races and races and races and just like back-to-back years of running and racing in your legs going into races, even racing to run like 315 to 330 didn't hurt as much as 5 years off. I'm going to give myself 4 months and then go to this Ironman. I was like, this is torture. I was literally like the last bit of the run. I thought I was just bobbing up and down the spot, and I thought I was just going to cramp up into a ball. So that cumulative, you know, volume year after year and racing, it really does come into play when you're planning your total year and pacing your year and how much preparation you need. And, you know, and people might say, oh, you've been an endurance athlete for 20 years. You don't, even if you take a 5 year break, you don't need that much preparation. Your body will remember. It doesn't remember. It totally doesn't remember. Like you need to take that into account and say like, okay, I probably still need that whole year's worth of preparation of running to be able to run a marathon decently and not have it be, maybe it might not even be your fastest, but it might be, so it's not painful.
Yeah. The problem is your mind remembers, but your body is in a very different place.
Exactly.
Your ability to handle the training is probably still there, right? You could still start training and handle more training than say someone who hasn't had that experience behind you, but you still need to do the training in order to be ready to race. Right. And 4 months of running probably isn't enough to handle the pounding of the Ironman distance.
Yeah. So that's just an important, like maybe a fun story to share when people are looking at their year, where they're at currently and pacing their year. You know, it's like, if you're taking all these moving parts into consideration and your own personal history and how long you have to an event, like just sometimes hearing these stories and past experiences of, you can slot in like where you're at and know, oh, where do I need to start my preparation and pace my year to my main event? You know, you can sort of slot yourself into, where am I at on this scale of things?
Yeah. From the place of extreme fear to, all the way to really chill out, 'cause you have a long time.
Exactly. Yeah. It's a big broad range. Yeah.
But yeah, no, it is good to think about. There are more races popping up on the calendar, and spring is actually not that far away. So people should definitely start thinking about how they're going to start allocating their energy and how much energy should they be putting in now. And, you know, how much energy do they have so that they're ready at the appropriate time and not ready too early, or perhaps they need to start panic training now in order to have the base required to get there on race day.
Not panic training, progressive overload begins sooner than later. Make sure you're saying it right. You told us too many stories of how to do it wrong to then use the word panic training. Everything Jesse said was spot on until he said panic training, then strike panic. That from their record.
But panic is Jesse's favorite word.
Yes. Yeah, it's like, yeah. Throw it in.
Panic
there.
Eating, panic training, panic shopping.
Oh, I have peanut butter filled pretzels right next to me. So
nice. Ready to go. Yeah, I don't know. I think the biggest takeaway is make sure you know where you're starting from and where you need to get to, and then really take some time to plan out how you're going to progress to get there at the right time. Do you guys have anything else you want to add to close this one out?
Yeah. And the last thing I would say is a fun project people could add to this whole thing is, you know, if you're looking at the weeks and months and you're planning your training, but then just also having, maybe keep a little a diary in terms of like emotionally how you respond throughout the year. And that's going to help you have a better understanding of like when you start to get anxious and maybe want to push at the wrong time, or maybe when you need to hold back and calm down, or the opposite. Maybe you're just a little bit too complacent for too long, and then you realize like last minute, holy crap, I better turn it on. Like start to keep a little journal of that and notice, even if it's in your training peaks with your coach or whatever, if you can start to understand what your patterns are as you go through the year? Are you someone, because usually, you know, most people have patterns and what they're and you know, where their downfalls are, where they're sort of making those mistakes, and you can start to figure that out together, whether it's reading back your own notes or with your coach or whatever, and you can start to manage that just a little bit better, and it becomes clearer. So I would just say a little, you've got your training diary and you understand what the training progression is going to be, but start to keep a little, like, you know, emotional log of when your anxiety, pre-race anxieties start, and maybe where they're a little bit asleep, and how you're going to manage that better and notice your habits and patterns there.
The best athletes are capable of getting in fairly productive training, not their most productive, but fairly productive training with a low amount of stress or anxiety. And anybody can get to that point, but a lot of it just entails planning and really making sure, okay, this is my block of time where I'm going to be really turned on, and it's okay maybe that I have to schedule things a little bit different for whatever it might be, 4, 6, 8 weeks. And then taking the more or less the rest of the year where you still train hard, but it's okay to have a dip here or there. And it's okay if everything's not perfect, as long as you generally are getting out the door.
Awesome. Sounds good. Well, thank you guys for spending an hour talking about pacing a year with me.
Yeah.
Thanks guys. Fun chat.
We have to pace a podcast too. Thanks.